Hello, we're about to start, so I just want to do a quick sound check. If you can hear me, please type yes in the Q&A box that's on the live event page. And as soon as I get a couple of yeses coming through, then I will know that you can hear me and that everything is live and okay, and then we'll get going. There's a little bit of a delay. Once you type yes, it takes about 18 seconds for it to come through, so I just need to give it a little bit of time. Okay, excellent. Lots of yeses. Thank you very much. That's brilliant. You can all hear me. Hello and welcome. You're listening to Fertility Question Time, brought to you by naturalfertilityexpert.com. I'm your host, Andrew Loosley, founder of Natural Fertility Expert and creator of the Baby Creating Plan, the 3 Steps to Pregnancy program to help you transform your general and fertility health. So today I'm here to talk to you about BBT charting, how and why it can make such a big difference to your fertility health and journey. It's a topic I've been wanting to talk about for quite some time. So as always, I'm excited to be here and share this information with you, and I'm sure that you'll find it helpful. One of the most important factors for women on a fertility journey is really for you to understand your menstrual cycle. And this includes the regularity of it, the different phases of the cycle, the various patterns of those phases, and also knowing when ovulation is happening. And these are kind of the really key factors that every woman on a fertility journey should know and should be able to understand very easily. BBT charting can help you to reach that point of clarity and know exactly what your cycle is doing and when. And with the help of a practitioner such as myself, it can be used even more extensively to help diagnose a variety of issues, and we'll talk about those. I'll explain those a little bit later. So in my preparation for today, I was trying to work out how many charts I have probably reviewed over the last nearly 18 years. And I did a really very conservative calculation and worked out that it's in excess of 25,000 BBT charts. So there is a lot of information that I've learned over the years, and this information I want to share with you today, it's obviously based on my experience, but it's also based on some foundational rules of BBT charting, because there is a specific way to do certain things. But there are lots of things out there that are talked about that are also not so important. So today I just want to outline the most important elements for you to actually do this efficiently and easily and really try to be able to understand it. So I'm aiming really to give you the basics in this session. I will talk more about BBT in the future if people want to hear even more, but I'm going to give you the basics to be able to create a foundation for yourself to use it properly. Towards the end of the session, I'll be answering your questions as usual, and just a very big thank you to everyone that sent in questions. We've had over 150 come in just on BBT charting, so I will do my best to answer as many as I can. It is very unlikely I will get to answer 150 plus questions, but I'll choose the ones that I feel are the most relevant and the most general questions, because quite a few people are asking similar or the same types of questions, and so I'll just pick one that covers all of those. Okay, so let's get started. So I want to just begin right at the beginning, really, and just talk about what BBT charting is, so that we start just sort of with a very foundational kind of view. So BBT charting is a method that's used to measure your resting body temperature when your metabolism is at its baseline or its lowest point. Okay, and this happens first thing in the morning after a period of rest or sleep. And when you wake up, it happens first thing in the morning when you wake up after a period of rest. And this is referred to as a resting temperature or basal temperature. So the name BBT charting is basal body temperature charting. So it's taking that resting temperature. It's the time of day when your body's temperature is at its lowest for the whole day. Now, throughout your cycle, your temperature will behave differently in relation to the different hormones that you're releasing at any given time in the cycle. Immediately after your period, you'll begin to release more estrogen as your body stimulates your follicles. And this increase in estrogen causes your body temperature to stay lower in the morning, as estrogen has a slightly cooling effect on your body. Once ovulation has occurred later in your cycle, your body releases higher levels of progesterone, and this hormone significantly warms up your core temperature, making the basal readings higher. When you start charting, you should be able to see these two distinct phases quite easily in your charts. If you haven't started charting yet, don't worry, by the end of this session you should be a lot clearer on how to do it, and we're going to review some charts as well. So if you have a look on the live event page, you'll see that there are a whole series of charts, and I'm going to talk through each of those and explain what's going on there, and basically how, you know, what we can see and take from it, and also how to do it step by step. Just a little note, if you are on a fertility journey that is involved with conventional medicine, with Western medicine, and you are BBT charting, and you take your BBT charts to your general practitioner, your consultant, your gynecologist, etc., it is highly likely that they won't be very interested in them. It is a method that was used for a while within Western medicine, but it is not used really anymore. There are still a few practitioners that do take interest in charts, but the majority kind of poo-poo it and think that it's a waste of time, it causes stress, and it doesn't tell you anything. I have to strongly disagree with that from my 18 years of experience, and from all of the charts I have looked at. And there are many, many times when we've been able to diagnose things with my clients that weren't found through conventional medicine because there was nothing giving an indicator that something was wrong. The BBT chart allows you to really look into the depths of what's happening within your body, and so it can be a really fantastic tool to use. So if you are working alongside conventional medicine, Western medicine, and they do have a slightly negative attitude towards it, then just kind of put that aside. But I would encourage you to continue charting. On a positive note, in terms of what goes on in the Western world, the family planning clinics still use BBT charting, or a lot of them still use it. And in terms of using it for contraception, using it in a reverse way to the way that we do, it has a 98% to 99% success rate. So we, within the fertility world, and particularly within natural medicine and Chinese medicine, we use BBT charting, but we use it in a reverse manner. So what we're looking for is the fertile time, and we're obviously encouraging people to be active during their fertile window. Just some thoughts there from a Western perspective. Okay, so that's what BBT charting is. It's measuring your basal body temperature first thing in the morning, at a point when it's resting. It is changeable through the cycle. You'll get lower temperatures in the first half, higher temperatures in the second half due to the different hormones that are being released. So let's talk about the key benefits of charting. And there are many, many benefits, but I picked out four main ones that I sort of focus on and think about when I think about charting. The first is that you always know where you are in your cycle. And this is actually a really important factor, because a lot of people kind of don't really, if they're not charting, not tracking their cycle, they don't really know where they are in their cycle. They don't know the best time to actually try to have intercourse. And many other factors relate to not knowing where you are in your cycle from a negative perspective. So it's very good to know where you are and have an understanding of which phase you're in. From a Chinese medicine viewpoint, you actually treat yourself differently as well. You would eat differently, act differently, exercise differently, sleep differently, potentially eat more frequently, eat less frequently, and so forth. So knowing where you are is really important, and that's one of the key benefits. The second is that you are able to identify the two phases of your cycle, which I'm going to talk more about. and also assess the length and the quality of these phases to make sure that they are healthy. The third point is that you're able to identify when ovulation is happening and see the regularity and the quality of it as well. Ovulation is the point that divides the cycle into the two phases. So either side of ovulation, you have a particular phase of the cycle, and that is seen then on a BBT chart. When you know where ovulation is happening, then you can time intercourse more specifically, and of course this greatly increases your chances of conception if the timing is correct. And while I was thinking about these points and things I wanted to talk about, I just remembered a story of a client that came to see me a couple of years ago, and they had been actually working with another Chinese medicine practitioner, not really a specialist in fertility, but was offering them fertility support, and did look at BBT charts. But when that practitioner looked at the chart, they thought that my client was ovulating around day 10 or 11. And so they basically advised my clients to start actively trying starting on day 8 and continuing to about day 13. And they'd been trying for several years and nothing had happened. When I met with my client and I did my detailed assessment, if you're a listener of Fertility Question Time, you'll have heard me talking about it many times. It's a 2.5-hour assessment that I do with my clients before I do any treatment or before I start a program. During that time, we assessed the BBT charts and we went through it in a lot of detail. And they said to me, oh, our practitioner's been telling us to try from day 8 onwards. And I looked at it and I said, but that's a bit strange because you're ovulating on day 17. So it would be good, actually, if you started a couple of days before that, continued through the time period of ovulation, and then continued a little bit afterwards as well. So we set them up, got them ready to start a program. They went away for a month. During that month, they tried at the time that I suggested, and they conceived instantly. So they didn't actually need to go ahead and have a fertility program with us, which was fantastic news. Instead, they went on and they did a first trimester program with me instead for the first 16 weeks of the pregnancy to make sure that the pregnancy was healthy. So and everything was fine, and they went on to have a healthy baby, and everyone is doing really well. So that was just something that came to mind in terms of really identifying ovulation, and that's not going to be the case for many people. I like to be sort of really clear about that, but it can happen, and it can be sometimes that people are not actually being active at the right time of the cycle. So it just shows you there that it's such an important aspect to get right, and BBT charting can help you do that. So the fourth benefit that I see, or fourth main benefit, is that you can see the patterns that are being created during the two phases of the cycle. And these will help you to understand your fertility health even further. And later on, I'm going to talk to you a little bit about the patterns that we look at in Chinese medicine and how we view them. They are a little bit complex, but I'm going to give you a sort of reasonable introduction to them and thoughts on them so that you can see how they can what they're telling you and what they mean about your cycle. The thing to remember is that the menstrual cycle is an outwardly expression of your fertility and your general health. And when you have tools like BBT charting, then you can start to read your body more efficiently and see if there are any areas that are not working as well as they should. If they are, you can see from the patterns what that's telling you and what that means, and then you can generally go on and have some type of supporting treatment that helps you to make that change. When you make that change and you see it reflected in the BBT chart, then it is showing that your health has improved, your cycle has improved, and that's obviously a very positive thing in terms of your fertility. So the next question really, or the next point to discuss, is how do you do it properly? There's a lot of information out there. Most of it is correct, but there are a few things that I think make BBT charting a bit too stressful for some people. So I'm just going to cover the really sort of basic elements of actually how to do it. So firstly, you just need two things to be able to chart. You need a thermometer, and you need some kind of chart to actually record the results, to record the temperatures every day. In terms of a thermometer, I've had lots of questions come in about thermometers, and it's a never-ending topic, to be quite honest. The absolute best and most accurate type of thermometer is a mercury one, okay? And that's the traditional glass thermometers that have the silver-coloured element in it. It's mercury, and that goes up efficiently, and it stays elevated until you actually shake it back down again. Okay, that is the most reliable way. I have to say it's not the easiest thermometer to read, particularly not early in the morning, but the great thing with mercury thermometers is that you can take your temperature and then you can put the thermometer aside and you can leave it and it will not go down, and you can then read it later on in the day. When you're using a mercury thermometer, you need to do it for 3 minutes. Unfortunately, you cannot buy them anymore in the EU. They are banned, and you're not able to purchase them. So if you have an existing one, or your parents have an existing one, or grandparents, or any families or friends, ask around. They may have one in their medicine cabinet. And if they do, I would encourage you to use that. If you can't get a mercury thermometer, or if you live outside the EU and you actually have access to them, some countries still do sell them, then by all means get one of those. If not, then you'll need to use a digital thermometer. And there are absolutely thousands of them available. The first thing I would say is don't go paying high prices for specific BBT charting thermometers. They generally actually have a lower reference kind of a range on them, so they don't go as low or as high. And they generally cost more money. You really, if you're looking for a digital thermometer, you need one that is for oral temperatures or vaginal temperatures, but generally most people do it orally. And it shouldn't really cost a lot of money. In the UK, we're talking probably about £3 or £4. You can get it in Boots or most pharmacies. And there are varying types of digital thermometers. The ones that I prefer are the ones that basically, when you put it in your mouth, it continues to measure the temperature for up to about 3 minutes. Okay, there are a lot that will literally do it within 30 seconds and beep. If your thermometer does that and it stops measuring after the beep, then you have to go with that. If, however, it continues to go up after the beep, if you leave it in your mouth and it continues to increase in temperature, then I would say measure it for a full 3 minutes. Okay, but generally, most digital thermometers are okay and they work pretty efficiently. So that's the first tool you need. The second is a chart to actually record the results, and you can do that either with a paper chart or with an online chart or an app. My favorite is to actually use an online version or the app version because it's accessible. My clients put the data in at their end, and I can access it online. They give me their login details, and I can go and look in and check their charts for them, which is what I do on a regular basis. My favorite website or favorite charting site at the moment is called fertilityfriend.com, and it's a free charting site. They also give you a little course that's free as well, and you can upgrade as well. I think it's about $45 to $50 American dollars for the year. But you can actually stay on the free version if you want to. So those are the two tools that you need. So to take your temperature properly, you take it each morning when you wake up, first thing before getting out of bed, and that's really important. So basically, as soon as you wake up, you take your temperature. You try not to speak, don't drink because that will change the temperature of your mouth, and don't get up out of bed. Okay. If, however, you wake up and you are absolutely desperate to go to the toilet and you can't wait for your temperature, then go to the bathroom and then come back and take it. It's not the most ideal scenario, but you know, I would still encourage you to take it rather than not. So take it first thing before doing anything else. Place the thermometer in your mouth, ideally under your tongue because it's a more consistent temperature, and measure the temperature and then make a note of it. When you're ready, record it on your chart, and you can also add any extra notes as well. When inputting it on the chart, make sure that you enter it on the correct day of the cycle. And cycle day one is the first day of your proper period. Okay, so when your period actually begins to flow properly, that's day one of your cycle. And so basically when you'll know when your period is, and then you can work out the days of your cycle from day one. So just make sure you enter the correct temperature on the correct day of your cycle. So that's it. In terms of taking it, that's how you do it. Every morning, ideally at the same time. Okay, it's best not to fluctuate the times. If you take it later, it will change. If you take it earlier, it will change. So the same time, first thing before you get up, and then take the reading and record it. It's recommended that you have at least 3 hours uninterrupted sleep before taking your temperature, and that you take it at the same time each day. If your sleep is disturbed in the early morning, take the temperature anyway, and just make a note on your chart as a reference so that you, if there is a change in that temperature, you know why when you look back. If you know, some people do not have 3 hours uninterrupted sleep, and so I kind of put the emphasis more on the same time each day. And if you do that, then you have a consistent element within your the way that you're charting, and you can just make notes for anything that's outside of the kind of norm. If you experience disturbed sleep, or you take your temperature later than usual, you normally see an increase, but sometimes a decrease in temperature on the chart. Either way, just make a note on it, as I said, so that you know why there was a different result for that day. You have to remember with BBT charting that you're collecting data. So whilst it's happening there and then in real time, it's good to record everything that you experience that's a little bit different. Because if you're then looking back after a month or 2 months or 3 months or 6 months, you won't remember the kind of smaller details. So it's a good idea to record everything that you can at the time. Also at weekends, I would suggest that you don't set an alarm to get up and do your BBT charting. Just be a bit more relaxed about it and take the temperature when you naturally wake up. However, saying that, if you want a really precise chart throughout the whole month, then you do need to take it at the same time each day. Okay, but if you're not too worried, you just want a general picture, then you could actually relax a little bit at weekends and just take it as and when you wake up. So that's how you actually do it. The other sort of aspect that is quite important with BBT charting is just trying to keep a positive state of mind. Many people get stressed with it. They worry too much about the day-to-day temperatures and panic that it's not in the right range, that it's a bit too low or it's a bit too high, or you know, they're not sure about ovulation. Is ovulation happening? Has it happened yet? And so forth. I really encourage people to try not to become obsessive with it. It's very easy to become obsessive with it or to become overly focused on it, but you really need to just treat it as a tool that's kind of showing you an overall pattern, okay? And you just need to recognize that each day is not actually as important as the entire pattern over the whole month. That's kind of what we're really looking for. You need to do a chart to be able to look back and say, I did ovulate on such and such a day, and this is what the pattern was like. Then you can get an understanding of what is likely to happen in the next month. When you have about two or three BBT charts, you should have a fairly stable pattern in most cases, and then you can start predicting from that what is likely to happen in the future. So the key thing really is just use it as a tool to help give you some guidance and a bit of clarity on what is happening overall, but try to stay relaxed with it and watch that pattern develop. Most of my clients find it really quite exciting, and they, most of them really do enjoy BBT charting because they can see their pattern, their cycle and their pattern sort of unfolding. And I teach a lot more about it on the program, and we talk through it so that they're really clear on what it means and what's going on. So we can actually start to talk through some example charts, and I want to go through these in more detail. So again, I'm going to go from the beginning in case we've got some people listening that have never charted before. I want to start initially with a blank chart, just so that we can work our way through that, and I'm just bringing that up on my screen. So let's start with the blank one and talk through what that's sort of showing you. So if you go to the live, you should be on the live event page if you're listening in online. If you're listening on the phone, you'll need to go to the live event page, which is naturalfertilityexpert.com/fertility-question-time-live-event. And it's the link that you'll have been emailed many times, so you should be able to find it there. So at the very first chart that we're looking at, it has a little description underneath it. It says blank chart, and it's got one blue dot on it. So looking at this, this is what a standard BBT chart looks like without any temperatures recorded on it. There is one little temperature there. I had to do that to be able to actually get the chart to show itself. And what you see on the left-hand side is the temperature range, starting at 35.9 and working up to 36.7. That needs to actually go higher. I wasn't able to get it to do that. That's just the software. But when you start actually charting, it will adjust itself accordingly so that it shows you everything. So you have the temperature range on the left-hand side. Along the bottom, you have the day, starting day one. And in this chart, it's running through to day 30. That is the cycle day. Okay, that is not the date of the month. It is the actual day of your cycle. Day one is the beginning of your period. It's when your period first starts to flow. And then, obviously, day two is the next day, day three and day four, and so forth. Along the top, you have the date. In this case, this is a very old chart from 2011. But in this case, the date is Thursday the 2nd, Friday the 3rd, Saturday the 4th, etc. So that's the date. And corresponding day of the cycle is at the bottom. So all you do is you take your temperature, you record it, and then in this particular software, you click on the chart on the day, and you just add in the measure that you got, the result that you got, and it automatically puts a little blue dot on there for you. And then over time, that will build up into a graph. Okay, so that's the blank chart, just so you know what it looks like. What I'd want to do now is move to the second chart, which is called balanced chart, and I'm going to just talk through this. So this is a chart, again, with the reference, the temperature reference on the left, the cycle days on the bottom, and the date along the top. And basically, the very first thing you should be able to see is that there are two different phases here. Okay, you have starting on day one, running right through to day 14, you have temperatures that are all 36.4 or below. Okay, and then from day 16 onwards, actually it went up to day 15, from day 16 onwards, you have temperatures that are basically 36.7 and above. Okay, and then you'll see it says day 28, and then it goes on to day one, which was the beginning of the next cycle, which we're not going to see. But so this is showing you what's called a biphasic chart, and this is a balanced and healthy BBT chart. You have the biphases, which are two phases, the first part and the second part. So the first part is called the follicular phase, and that is basically from your period up to the point of ovulation. Ovulation is then in the middle, and that's basically from cycle day 15 to 16. You can see a big straight line that increases, goes upwards. And then basically from day 16 all the way through to 28, that is the luteal phase. So you have the follicular phase where the follicles are developing. You have ovulation in the middle, and then you have the luteal phase with higher temperatures showing progesterone production. So the ranges for each of these phases, the follicular phase, the first phase from the period up to ovulation, the temperature range should be, as it is on this chart actually, pretty much, it should be between 36.2 and 36.5 degrees centigrade. For our American listeners and for other people using Fahrenheit, that's 97.1 to 97.7 Fahrenheit. And basically, you want to kind of see a fairly balanced pattern. Now, this one is a little bit unusual because you've got many days of the same temperature in the follicular phase. It doesn't happen very often like that, but it does happen like that at times. Generally, you'll see slight up and down movement slight changes of about 0.1 to 2 degrees. But the range that you want it to be in ideally is 36.2 to 36.5. Anything below that starts to tell us different things about what's happening. Anything below 36 degrees is telling us something very specific about your body, telling us that your body is not working as efficiently or as actively as it should. Anything above 36.5 is classified as too high for this phase, and that tells you something different. And I'm going to talk through a few of these examples. The second phase of the cycle is called the luteal phase, as I said, and the ideal temperature range is 36.7 to 37 degrees. The most important thing, though, is actually when ovulation happens, there should be a switch in temperature of 0.3 to 0.5 degrees. Okay. Now, in Fahrenheit, that's 1 degree exactly, and there should basically be a shift from the existing temperature in the follicular phase. It should go up 0.3 to 0.5 degrees centigrade, or 1 degree Fahrenheit, and that shows you that ovulation is likely to have happened. And on this chart, it's very clear. Day 15 to day 16, there's a big shift there. And on this chart, you can also see just above the red line, the horizontal red line, you'll see numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, all the way to 13, and some letters DPO. That means days post-ovulation. So number 1 is 1 day post-ovulation, number 2, 2 days post, 3 days post, etc. So the luteal range, as I said, should be between 36.7 to 37 degrees. In Fahrenheit, that's 98 to 98.6 degrees. The length of each of these phases should be quite specific as well. The follicular phase, the first part, should ideally be 12 to 14 days. According to Western thinking and textbooks, it can go as low as 10 days, but that really isn't ideal. There is a chance that at 10 days, the follicular phase will just be too short and the eggs may not have matured or be really fully ready for release. So if you do ovulate earlier, that could potentially be an issue. And in Chinese medicine and the way I work, we would look to try to lengthen the follicular phase to 12 to 14 days. That's the absolute sort of ideal. The luteal phase should also be at least 12 to 14 days long. Again, anything under 10 is not seen as being healthy. It takes at least 10 days post-ovulation, potentially, for an embryo to implant. Actually, the discussions say that generally embryos implant somewhere between 6 to 12 days after ovulation. That's not always going to be the case, but that's the kind of average that they talk about. And so if you have a luteal phase that's 9 days or 8 days or 7 days, and implantation doesn't happen within that time, then pregnancy obviously won't happen. So it's important to have a sort of 12 to 14 day follicular phase and luteal phase if you can. Ovulation then should be ideally between days 12 to 16 of the cycle. Okay? And basically that's the optimum time for it. If it's too early, as I said, that could affect egg quality. The eggs may not be mature enough, potentially. If it comes a lot later than day 16, there is the concern that the eggs, having been ready for release, may deteriorate to some degree in that cycle. Okay? It won't affect the other eggs that haven't come to the surface yet, but it will potentially affect the quality of the eggs in that cycle. And ovulation, as I said, is marked on this chart with a nice clear rise in temperature. And what we're looking at here, basically, as I said before, is that in the first half, in the follicular phase, we're looking at the effects of estrogen, a particular estrogen called estradiol. And with the level of estrogen that was being released here in this cycle, it was keeping the temperatures within the right range, which is great. The estrogen level then produced on days 12 and 13 some cervical mucus, egg white mucus, marked on the chart with an E in green under days 12 to 13, and there was sufficient estrogen there to keep the temperatures correct, produce some cervical mucus, and then allow ovulation to happen. Once ovulation happened, the body started releasing more progesterone. That is partly from the corpus luteum, the collapsed follicle, okay, the ruptured follicle, and that was starting to release enough progesterone to warm up the body and keep the temperature fairly stable all the way through the luteal phase. And as we can see, she had a 13-day luteal phase here, which is completely healthy and normal, and she had a 28-day cycle in total. There is a very easy rule for identifying ovulation. Now, this chart is really a very balanced chart, and it's not always like this. Sometimes temperatures are up and down all over the place, and it can be a little bit complicated to read. So there's a simple rule called the 3/6 rule, and this is to identify ovulation. Okay. Now, it's not always going to work for you. There will be times when you apply that rule and you think, well, actually, I'm not very clear, still not clear. And some cycles are like that. Ovulation just isn't very clear on the BBT chart. But for the majority of people, majority of cycles, it will be. So the 3/6 rule basically means that when you have three elevated temperatures over six previous lower temperatures, ovulation has occurred. Okay, so looking at this balance chart, we can see that on day 15 of the cycle, her temperature was 36.4, but on day 16, it was 36.7. So that was the first elevated day. Okay. The second elevated day was day 17, it was 36.8, and the third elevated day was day 18 at 36.8 again. Now, there you have your three higher temperatures over the previous six temperatures, where you have day 15, 14, 13, 12, 11, 10, 9, and all of the others actually, are all significantly lower than those three raised ones. And that tells you basically that between day 15 and 16, this person ovulated. Okay, so it's called the 3/6 rule. You're looking for three elevated temperatures over six lower temperatures. I know I keep repeating myself. Hopefully that's not annoying. I just want to be really clear with this because there are a lot of things to calculate here and think about. So that's that is a balanced, healthy cycle. You have the follicular phase with the correct range of temperatures, 36.2 to 36.5 degrees centigrade or 97.1 to 97.7 Fahrenheit. The phase should be 12 to 14 days ideally. You then have the luteal phase, the second half after ovulation, 36.7 to 37 degrees centigrade or 98 to 98.6 Fahrenheit. And you have ovulation in the middle, which you can see very clearly here with the 3/6 rule, three elevated temperatures over six previous ones. And that tells you that ovulation occurred between days 15 to 16. The reason I say between and not on is because between each of these temperatures, there is a 24-hour time period, and ovulation usually happens within 12 hours. So it hadn't happened on day 15, but it had happened on day 16, so somewhere during that time. Now, if you're using software like this, the chart will actually put in lines, as you can see. It is putting in the vertical line to show the day on which, or the days between, where ovulation occurred, and then it's putting a horizontal line to show you the base temperatures, and that allows you to find the 3/6 more easily. One word of caution with these types of software, they are programmed using a variety of different algorithms, and they don't always give you an exact date and time or day, sorry, of ovulation. Sometimes they get it wrong. On this particular one, fertilityfriend.com, you get a complete straight line like this, a solid line, if it thinks very strongly that you ovulated there. If it's not 100% sure, then it will actually perforate the line, okay, and give you a red perforated line. And different software is going to behave differently, but they have different algorithms. So don't just go on that. It is actually really good to learn these basic principles and know how to do it yourself. Okay, so that's a healthy chart. What I would like to do now is just look at some charts that are not so balanced, okay, to show you the other side of things, to show you actually a more realistic presentation of issues that arise during the cycles. I will talk about a few things from a few elements from Chinese medicine viewpoint, and I will also talk about the very general way in which you might be able to do something about it if you do experience these kind of problems. So the next chart down is the long and high follicular phase. So, excuse me, just having a sip of water. In this chart, you can immediately see the very first thing to do is look at the length of the cycle. It's 32 days. This is actually the same person, and just a very quick thank you to Angela, our nutritionist, because these are her charts, not all of them, but some of them, and she's kindly let me use them, which is great. So in this, you can see that the whole cycle was 32 days long, and we've got a few different things happening here, actually. The key thing is that ovulation happens very late in this cycle. Okay, and the software is showing day 21. That is not, it is not using the algorithm of the 3/6 rule that I just told you about. If it was, it would have shifted it along another day. I would say actually that ovulation, according to BBT principles generally, and because of the way the follicular phase is, I would say that ovulation actually occurred on day 22, between 22 and 23. Or possibly even 23 to 24, but definitely after day 22, okay? And the reason is that basically from day 23 onwards, you have three elevated temperatures over the previous six. So the very first thing to, or the kind of key point here is that this is a longer cycle of 32 days. The reason it's longer is because ovulation is longer. And it's really important to kind of bear in mind or remember that ovulation actually determines, in most cases, determines the length of the cycle, okay? And that ovulation doesn't always happen in the middle of the cycle. So here it is not in the middle of the cycle. It is slightly further along. And if you have a longer cycle, then you are going to be ovulating later. Okay, that's one of the key things to understand and to always review. And hopefully with BBT charting, you'll then be able to identify where that is happening. So firstly, this is a longer follicular phase. So the first half of the cycle was extended to 21 days. That is now past the 16th day, and you could potentially start to think that possibly egg quality might have been deteriorating a little bit here. It is a little bit too long. There is still a possibility of pregnancy, but generally you want to kind of try to move ovulation earlier in the cycle. The other factor here is that there are some higher temperatures, okay? And the higher temperatures are in the follicular phase in the first half, and we've got some going up to 36.7. These are 0.2 degrees too high for this phase. And they indicate something very specific as well, which I'll explain in a moment. The generally and often when you see high temperatures in the follicular phase, you will see even more than this. This is not the best example of high temperatures. You may see them even higher, or you may just see more of them being higher in the follicular phase. But I thought this was quite a good chart because it shows you high temperatures and a long phase, a long follicular phase, and later ovulation at the same time. So the meaning of this in Chinese medicine, looking at the long aspect, this basically shows us that there is likely to be a deficiency of good quality body fluid and blood. In Chinese medicine, we call this substance. And these substances nourish the ovaries and help growth, and they help the development of the follicles and the eggs as well, the maturation of the eggs. And they also help those substances, the blood and the body fluids, also help the endometrium, the lining of the womb, to thicken and get to its right point. So when the follicular phase is extended like this, there is a possibility that the substance level of that person, the body fluids and the blood quality, are compromised, okay, and that they are not as strong as they need to be, and the ovaries are not getting the nourishment they need. That means that they can't respond properly to stimulation from the pituitary gland, and it means that ovulation doesn't happen when it should. It happens later. What will happen is that in most cases is that that person's body will basically try to retain those substances and try to balance it as much as possible. You might start craving certain foods and more rest. And when you do that, then suddenly you give your body the nourishment it needs, and it is then able to go on and ovulate. There is also a possibility that a long follicular phase is caused by stress and overthinking. Okay? And this can really cause a disturbance in the pituitary gland, and that will then affect hormone production, which can affect the stimulation of the follicles, which then means the follicles don't develop as efficiently as they should, and they don't release the estrogen that they should, and the whole cycle kind of slows down. And in Chinese medicine, we call that stagnation. We would say that there is some stagnation in this cycle. So it's either going to be that there is a kind of compromised level of body fluids and substance, or there is some stagnation there, or a combination of both, which happens quite often. The thing to do in most cases for balancing the follicular phase is to eat blood-enriching foods. And the types of foods are green leafy vegetables, dark red foods such as beetroot and blackberries, and anything that looks like blood. If you eat meat, then you want to eat as much red meat as you can, and if you don't mind organ meats, then you want to eat liver particularly, and kidneys can be very helpful as well, and heart can be very helpful as well if you don't mind organ meats. All of those things will help to nourish the blood and improve the substance quality, which will then have a knock-on effect in the way that the ovaries are nourished. Those foods also help to calm the mind a little bit as well, and that can help if there is too much stress and overactivity of mind. And this is a time in the month when you should actually be very calm, very relaxed, and very still. So if you are stressed, or you think that your cycle might be out of balance due to stress, then try to create some space here in this time of the cycle and take it a lot easier. People think that they always have to relax or rest in the luteal phase because of possible pregnancy, but actually the first half is the time for quietness, stillness, and relaxation. And the second half, you don't want to go crazy, but it is actually the more active half of the cycle. So that's in terms of a longer follicular phase. A higher follicular phase, as I said, will often show with more elevated temperatures than what we're looking at here. But even these ones, there are sufficient. There are basically 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 temperatures in the follicular phase here, which are technically a little bit too high. So this does constitute a high follicular phase. And this tells us in Chinese medicine that the body is retaining too much internal heat. Okay, and this can be caused also by the same problem as I just talked about, a lack of substance in the body, a lack of body fluids, because the body fluids actually cool the body down and stop heat from elevating and being retained in the body. So this kind of problem, an elevated temperature, can cause issues with the endometrium not being stable. So if you have consistently elevated temperatures in the first half, the endometrium may not build up as it should do, it may not thicken as it should do, and you can start to actually see some spotting before the middle of your cycle or around mid-cycle. And or what you might find is that your period doesn't actually stop spotting, it just continues for a really extended time frame. Often you'll see elevated temperatures, and if you do, it means that there's too much heat there. It's actually damaging the blood vessels, and it's not allowing the endometrium to fully replenish itself and build up, and it basically aggravates the structure of it, and you start to have a breakdown of the endometrium. The way that you deal with this, again, these are very basic methods. It's not going to work for everyone. Some people will need to have treatment, such as herbal treatment, which is very effective for dealing with these kind of issues. But the approach is, as I just mentioned before, is about nourishing the blood and the fluids in the body, which should help to clear some heat. Green leafy vegetables are generally bitter in flavor, and that bitter flavor will help to clear heat in the first half of the cycle. And the red meat and the beetroot and blackberries and those kind of foods, blood nourishing foods, will help to nourish the fluids so that the body actually starts to cool itself down and regulate its temperature. Okay, so that's that cycle. You have extended ovulation here, the longer follicular phase, and the higher follicular temperatures. The luteal phase in this case was okay. It kind of went very high, and then it sort of starts to come down and it collapses a little bit. So it also wasn't brilliant. The reason it wasn't brilliant was because the first half was not correct. There was no foundation in place in the first half of the cycle in the follicular phase. It was too long and extended with high temperatures, so the endometrium did not create a good foundation here, and also the follicles would not have had sufficient nourishment, which means that when it comes to the ruptured follicle producing progesterone and staying really stable for a long time in the luteal phase, it wasn't probably happening very well, and so you had a kind of collapse of the luteal phase as well. It's important that we don't actually look at each of these phases independently, but actually that they are actually interdependent. They depend on each other. So you want to get both aspects of the cycle right, and to treat the luteal phase, we often treat the follicular phase as well. So how are we doing for time? Okay, I'm talking a lot, but we're pretty all right. So the next chart along is a chart that shows a short follicular phase. And the short follicular phase basically is a bit more of an extension of showing that there is too much heat in the body. So what we have here on this chart is basically 8 days of temperatures, and then ovulation happens. And you can see very clearly that from day 9 onwards, all of the temperatures are very clearly elevated over the previous ones. That means that ovulation happened between days 8 and 9, and that is too early for a cycle. So the chart is showing us that ovulation was premature. It happened on day 8. And this means that the endometrium would not be stable and not be properly thickened, potentially. The egg quality is likely to be poorer because it hasn't had enough time after the period for the nutrients to build up and feed it, because during your period you lose nutrients. This tells us in Chinese medicine basically that there is too much heat in the follicular phase. And what we end up with is early ovulation and a short cycle in total. This lady had 14 day luteal phase, which is absolutely perfect, but the follicular phase was just 8 days. And in total, that obviously gave a 22 day cycle. So the Chinese way of thinking here is that there is too much heat. That heat is going to actually aggravate and stimulate the pituitary gland, which then stimulates it into actually producing higher levels of hormones to encourage ovulation to happen more quickly. So in Chinese medicine, what we need to do with this person is actually very strongly nourish their fluids and their blood quality through diet and through herbal medicine, ideally, and basically move ovulation much more towards the 14th day. What I can say, I should have actually given another one of a few months later, because after working with this lady, we now have ovulation always at between days 13 and 15, and a very good luteal phase as well. So in this case, you want to, again, because we're dealing with a follicular phase, you want to go for the same types of foods, blood nourishing foods, there needs to be some kind of heat clearing element going on there. If that doesn't work enough, just using the foods on their own and calming down and making sure that you're relaxed and sleeping lots and keeping calm during this phase, if that's not enough to extend the follicular phase, then I would strongly suggest using herbal medicine. I've had really amazing results with that with hundreds of women over the years in extending the follicular phase and getting that balanced and getting ovulation at the right time. Okay, so now we have a slightly different pattern here. The next one along is called a sawtooth pattern. And just so that everyone's following, each chart is labeled at the bottom of the chart in the gray area, and it says sawtooth pattern. Now, a sawtooth pattern is something very different. What we have here when we look at the cycle, let's look at everything again and review it all. We have a 29-day cycle. We have a 17-day follicular phase, so that's a bit long. And we have a 12-day luteal phase, but with some lower temperatures towards the end. So actually, the healthy part of the luteal phase was only really 10 days, and even then in between, halfway through, there was a bit of a collapse of it. Again, with this particular person, it's because her blood quality was not so strong in the first half of the cycle, and she didn't have the foundation for the luteal phase to be strong in the second part. So what you can see, interestingly, is that this chart is the same person that basically gave us the balance chart right at the beginning. So the second chart on the page, the balance chart, you can see 4 years later how different her cycle is. Now, it didn't take her 4 years to get there. It happened much more quickly. But you can see her chart was much, much healthier 4 years later. She had a normal cycle. So going back to this one, the sawtooth pattern is basically where you get a very jagged chart. So if you're looking at the follicular phase, very much from day six onwards, you get a spiky up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down kind of pattern. And that also goes into the luteal phase, and then it kind of calms down in the last sort of 6 days or so. But a sawtooth pattern is representative primarily of stress. Again, in Chinese medicine, we call this stagnation. There is a lack of proper flow and movement of the qi through the body, that is not obviously beneficial. What it's doing is it's signaling on and off to the pituitary, and it's causing quite a bit of confusion. So you get these high temperatures, you get these low temperatures, and then high and then low, and then high and then low. And it's kind of the erraticness that stress actually produces, and that's very, very clear in these kind of charts. So if you have a sawtooth pattern, there is most definitely or very likely to be some aspect of stress or overthinking going on. The action that you need to take there is very much a lifestyle one about trying to deal with any elements of stress that are there. If you can't resolve those, again, herbal medicine, diet and lifestyle changes in general altogether sort of combined can be very helpful and very, very effective for dealing with that. So this was just more, rather than looking so much at the length of each phase, this was more just looking at the pattern here. And there are many different types of patterns. Unfortunately, we don't have time to go into all of them. I've just picked the most common ones. This is a very common pattern, this sort of jagged sawtooth pattern. So the next chart along, let's have a look at that. That's called short luteal phase. So now we're moving to the second half of the cycle. Okay. In this case, when we look at the whole cycle in total, it's a 30-day cycle. The follicular phase was 23 days long, and there were some low temperatures here, going way below the 36.2, really, that we wanted to see. The majority of the follicular phase actually is too low. But what I want to focus on here is the luteal phase. The entire luteal phase was only 7 days, so after ovulation, the temperatures only remained elevated for 7 days. They also were very low. They were below the 36.7 mark. However, they were significantly higher than the previous ones. So for this particular lady, her body was actually doing what it should be doing, and those temperatures are reasonable, but really for pregnancy, they do generally need to be higher. But more importantly, the luteal phase needs to be longer than 7 days. As I said, 10 is the absolute minimum. If it's below 10, there is very likely going to be an issue with implantation and the endometrium falling, you know, sort of being released and removed before implantation can happen or in the very early stages of implantation. So pregnancy doesn't remain viable or doesn't even become possible with a short luteal phase. What we're looking at here in terms of Chinese medicine is that there is a deficiency of qi, of energy, vitality, and there's very much a deficiency of warmth. Very often when you get a short luteal phase, you will also get lower temperatures combined. However, that's not always the case. Sometimes you'll have good temperatures, but just a very short time period. And other times you'll have low temperatures, but for a good 12 to 14 days. Either way, both of those situations signify that there is a deficiency of warmth and activity of the body, and normally that means that the qi, the vitality, is depleted. That means that in more Western terms, there is possible adrenal fatigue, and if there's adrenal fatigue, then the adrenals can't produce the progesterone that they're supposed to. It also shows that there is likely to be a corpus luteum defect, which means that the corpus luteum also can't produce the amount of progesterone that's required. And what you end up with is a short luteal phase with low temperatures. The key thing here in terms of treatment of Chinese medicine, things that you can do yourself, you need to eat much more frequently. And even if you don't have a short luteal phase or low temperatures, if you want to keep your luteal phase as healthy as you can and optimize your chances of pregnancy and implantation and conception, then you need to eat more frequently in the luteal phase than you do in the first half. You should eat normally through the first half, but you should eat a slightly increased amount in the luteal phase. That's one way to deal with this type of issue. The other is to eat warming foods, cooked foods, no raw foods, no juices or smoothies, and make sure that you get slightly more starchy foods, but healthy starchy foods, such as grains, rice, quinoa, particularly rice is very good, and also root vegetables, potato, sweet potato, carrot, parsnip, beetroot, and so forth. They will all deliver lots of energy. They will help build up that core energy and qi and warm up the body a little as well. Again, this is where herbal medicine might be required, but that's something that you can try out first and see. And in Western terms, again, what this tells us, the short luteal phase and low temperatures, tells us that the metabolic rate of that person's body is underactive. So your metabolism may not be working as efficiently as it should do or could do. So that's the short luteal phase. The final chart that I'm going to look at is a long luteal phase. And the only time where a cycle will have a long and extended luteal phase is when there is a positive pregnancy. And it has to go beyond 18 days. If you can clearly identify ovulation and you know that you ovulated on a particular day and you get to 18 days past ovulation and there is no period and the temperatures haven't dropped, then it is very, very likely that pregnancy has occurred. So this is a very positive chart. It's the only time when a long phase is actually positive. And as you can see, the chart, because of a positive pregnancy test, the software has actually changed all of the temperatures into green. And you can see that those temperatures stay elevated. Now, I have to say this particular lady had some big drops here. And those kind of big drops during the pregnancy just indicate that her energy went too low that day. Okay, and if you have that during pregnancy, I would strongly suggest that you take the day off work and that you actually spend the day resting, eating warming foods and keeping warm and sleeping as much as you can, and the temperature should return back to normal the next day. This lady was actually on herbal support throughout the first 16 weeks of her treatment, and she went on to have a healthy baby. And actually, I've just realized that this is the chart of the lady that I mentioned earlier who was getting was basically trying at the wrong time of the month. And this is her chart, I've just realized, because I recognize the pattern. So this is where the long luteal phase is positive, obviously, positive pregnancy, and that continued healthily. And the way to basically look after your pregnancy in the early phases is to do exactly what I just said about adjusting the temperatures for a short luteal phase, eat more frequently, eat warm foods only, and there are many other things you can do as well, but eat more starch-based foods for the first 12 weeks, and that's a really good way to go. So as I mentioned, there are lots and lots of patterns. There are many more than this. Unfortunately, there just isn't enough time to go through absolutely everything, but I've covered the most important ones and the most common ones. So I hope that that's been of help and given you a sort of better insight. It's really important to note that everyone is different in terms of temperatures. Some people have a lower temperature naturally and some a higher temperature naturally, but generally the guidelines I've given you are really for the majority of people. And if you have anything that's excessively low or excessively high, you know that it might be worth actually looking into to doing something about that. I do recommend for treating a menstrual cycle and balancing it and getting the cycles back into a good rhythm, I do recommend herbal medicine. If you listen to me frequently, you'll hear me say that all the time. That's because that's what I do, and I know it works, and I'm very passionate about it. Herbal medicine is able to deliver nutrients and substances to your body to actually rectify the different elements that need to be changed. So if we have a long follicular phase, we would be using herbs to nourish the blood and the body fluids and clear any heat there to bring ovulation to the right point. If the luteal phase is too short or too low, we use herbs to increase the temperature and lengthen the cycle, and thereby, you know, attaining balance. So herbal medicine is very helpful. Diet is very helpful as a support to herbal medicine, but you can sometimes get some good changes with diet alone. And lifestyle changes are very important, as also can be emotional support, and in some cases, fertility massage. If we have a lot of stagnation in the body, sometimes fertility massage can be quite helpful to induce relaxation and to actually clear, physically move and clear that stagnation. Okay, so I'm going to go into the question section in a moment. And I can also see that there are some people asking, as is always the case with fertility question time, about how they can work with me. So I'm just going to explain very briefly a little bit about that, and then we'll get into the Q&A session. So just to explain the way that I work and how things operate, before I take anyone onto my program, I like to make sure that I can help you. So to know that and to work that out, we need to spend a bit of time together talking through your current situation and your journey and discuss the different options that are available to you and see whether I feel that I can help. To do this, I offer a free online discovery session, which lasts about 30 minutes, and you can apply for that. We can basically sit down and talk through your journey so far and the next steps and so forth. During that session, we do a few things. We get together on Skype or phone, and we discuss your current situation. And then I actually help you to create a clearer vision of the next steps to take on your journey and the best way to optimize your fertility health. And we spend some time also looking at the things that might be hidden, some hidden challenges that might be stopping you or potentially sabotaging your success so far. And you also get to hear in that session about how I work and see whether that is right for you and see whether working with me would be the right thing for you. And basically, once you complete that session, you'll leave the session feeling renewed and re-energized, I can promise you that, and inspired as well to take the right next step. So if you listen to FQT frequently, you'll know that I do offer these sessions out quite regularly. In October, in this month, I don't have so many spaces. I only have about 10 spaces available for these sessions. So if it's something of interest to you, because I have had a few questions come through, then for those people, I would say book your free discovery session and let's have a chat through your journey so far and your situation and talk about the options of working with me and how I may or may be able to help you or may not be able to help you, as is the case. So The way to book that session is that on the live event page where all of those charts are that we've just talked through, there is also a link somewhere near the top above the charts to claim your free discovery session. As I said, there are only 10 spaces for at least the next month. So if you are interested, book it now, because they will go very quickly. Once they're gone, they are gone. I can't release any more until at least the next month, possibly later than that. Okay, so I'm going to go straight into the question section so that we can just keep going. It is, I'm slightly over time, but I'm going to answer questions for at least 20 minutes. So I'm going to do as many as I can in the next 20 minutes. Okay, so let's have a look here. I've got to flick through some of these here. Okay, a very simple question from Phoebe in Tasmania. She says, can you clarify how to identify day one when it is preceded by spotting? Thank you, Phoebe. That's a really good question. And a very common one. Basically, any spotting before your period actually begins. Okay, so spotting before a proper bleed is actually classed as the previous cycle. So basically, a period is identified by a proper flow of blood, a proper and consistent flow of blood. So once it starts moving and flowing, that is day one of the period. If you have spotting before that, that is actually the end of the previous cycle. Okay, spotting before a proper bleed is always the end of a cycle. It is not the beginning of a new one. Okay. Spotting at the end of the period, however, that has no effect. That's just an extended period. So to identify day one, you're basically looking for a proper and consistent flow of blood. Excuse me. And that will be more than just spotting. Okay. I hope that helps. So Nadine in Hamburg has a question, and she says, dear Andrew, first, thanks a lot for doing these question times. You're very welcome, Nadine. It's an absolute pleasure. I've heard if the temperature is over 36.6 Celsius and going up to 36.8 Celsius during the second phase, the luteal phase, it should be okay. But the other day, I heard it must be even higher in the second half, more like 36.9. I'm thinking I lack progesterone in order to keep the temperature even, though it is always in the range of 36.6 to 36.8 maximum, but not sure. I'm grateful if you could clarify on this matter in detail in order to know better. Thanks so much, Nadine. Okay. Thank you, Nadine. Also, another good question. All the questions are good, I have to say. 36.6 is a little bit on the low side, ideally. It really does come down to the shift in ovulation. As I said before, you want to see a shift of 0.3 to 0.5 degrees from the previous lower temperatures. And when you see that and you know ovulation has happened, as long as those temperatures remain 0.3 to 0.5 degrees above the previous ones, then it should be okay. However, I like to see the luteal phase at a minimum of 36.7, if I can, and ideally at the higher end of 36.8, 36.9. Now, lower temperatures in the luteal phase don't necessarily mean that the progesterone is low. Okay, this is one of the, I wouldn't say myths, because it is correct to a degree, but it's one of the things that's discussed a lot when you read about BBT charting. And the discussion basically is that if the temperatures are low in the luteal phase, then progesterone is deficient. That's not always the case. I've actually compared it to actual blood tests and scan results, and I found in many cases actually that low temperatures in the luteal phase can actually have a completely normal or okay level of progesterone. Okay, and likewise, having perfectly high temperatures doesn't also mean that the progesterone is high and at the right level. The only way you will know whether the progesterone is actually at the correct level is to either do a blood test 7 days after ovulation, well, between 6 and 8 days after ovulation, or to do a scan 6 to 8 days after ovulation and have a look for the corpus luteum. If they see the corpus luteum in the scan, it means you ovulated, and that will be a good indication that ovulation is happening, but the way to really measure the actual progesterone level is just through blood, is doing a blood test between days 6 to 8 of your cycle. So you can, however, Nadine, still get pregnant on temperatures of 36.6. I would just work on trying to increase those temperatures, look at your diet, look at herbal medicine as an option, and try to support the luteal phase and increase those temperatures. When you do that, there is a possibility that things will change quite significantly. And also check your progesterone level. As I said before on some of my testing talks, I encourage everyone, both men and women, to do repeats of their tests every 6 months. So you should be checking your progesterone as part of your general profile to see whether it's at the right level. If it is, then that's okay. Then what that lower temperature is telling you from a Chinese viewpoint is that your energy, your qi, or your vitality is not as strong as it could be. And then you could work on that through diet and through herbal medicine and through lifestyle. Okay, so I have a question from Caroline in Leicester, and she says, if you miss a period but are not pregnant, is there any chance you could still ovulate before your next period does arrive? The answer is yes. If you miss a period, yes, you are missing it in a sense, but actually what's happened is that your current cycle is just extended. It will be extended for a variety of reasons. As I said before, it can be a deficiency of substance, or it can be also stagnation in terms of emotional elements. Stress and worry, anxiety, overthinking, and so forth can create a delay in ovulation. And basically, if the cycle is extended, at some point you should potentially ovulate. And so in a long cycle, you may just ovulate later. You don't absolutely have to ovulate for another period to arrive, but generally, in most cases, most women will ovulate, and then the period will start anywhere up to 14 days after ovulation. Okay, so let's have a look. Who's next? Okay, next question from Michelle in Germany, a couple of people in Germany today. She says, should you chart your BBT even though you are irregular? Will being irregular affect ovulation? Having an irregular cycle will affect ovulation. The cycle is actually irregular because ovulation is not happening at the correct, in quotes, correct time of the cycle. An irregular cycle will just mean that ovulation is erratic. It's either coming earlier or later, depending on whether you have longer cycles or short and long cycles or a mixture. I would say to BBT, definitely in this situation, there's only one case where I would say that BBT charting can be quite stressful or a bit irritating, and that is when you have no cycle at all. And if you haven't had a cycle for months and months and months, and you then start BBT charting, you're basically going to see a very consistent kind of temperature range with not much change. So that can be frustrating, but it can still be helpful because you can see how often you have cervical mucus. You can record that on the chart. That can show you that ovulation is getting closer. You can also see spikes in temperature and things like that, and you can also see them when you do actually ovulate. So I would say with an irregular cycle, I would BBT chart. It can show you exactly what's happening. Sometimes you might have shorter cycles. Sometimes you might have longer. You'll be able to identify where ovulation is. And if you're working with a practitioner of natural medicine, particularly Chinese medicine, someone you know that specializes in fertility, then they will be able to look at those patterns and have a clearer understanding as to what's going on within your body and why you may be having that. They can then actually create a treatment protocol based around that, and you can start to regulate your cycle, which is and that's how we do it in Chinese medicine. Okay. There are quite a few questions about thermometers. Does it matter which one to use? I've talked about that already, so I'm not going to spend time on that. Okay, just bear with me here. I'm just having a quick read through to see which are good ones for everybody. Okay, Lorraine in Montreal says, my reading in the morning seems to always be low. Could this affect my fertility? How do I improve it? If it is basically between below 36.2, or you could go down to 36.1. So about 97 degrees Fahrenheit. If it's below that, then that is too low. And it could have an effect on your fertility. What it's potentially telling us is that your vitality, your metabolic rate is too low, your vitality is low, your energy is not as high as it could be, your body isn't working on quite as high a level of activity as it needs to be ideally. So that could have an impact with fertility. There is a lot of discussion about low BBT charts and thyroid issues. It is always worth having your thyroid checked if your temperatures are below the normal ranges. It can indicate potentially a thyroid issue, but not always. If you have all of the aspects of your thyroid checked, and if you want to know what those are, go back to my previous testing event, which is in the replay section of Fertility Question Time, and you can hear all about testing, and I talk about all of the thyroid tests to do. If you have all of that done and the thyroid comes back as completely healthy, then it is very much just an energy-based thing, and it is showing that your body is just underactive and not warm enough. Again, that can be changed to a degree through diet, but it can be very specifically and very strongly changed through herbal medicine. So those are the kind of key things to use. Particularly the starchy foods, as I mentioned earlier, root vegetables and some grains can be very helpful. Some of the blood-building herbs can be very helpful as well, like beetroot and blackberries and red meat and organ meats if you do eat meat. But you might need herbal medicine to actually bring that even higher. Okay, next question. Let's have a look here. I've had so many questions come in. Thank you so much for all of them, and my apologies for not being able to answer absolutely everybody's. I'm trying to kind of group these together as much as I can. Daniela has written in and said, can you work on raising energy and lowering stress with help of acupuncture? And that will obviously have an effect on BBT charts. I can't elaborate too much on that, but yes, you can. Increase energy, and that will give you more balanced readings, and you can lower stress levels with acupuncture. But for changing a cycle, in honesty, acupuncture is very, very good for stress specifically because it moves the stagnation that creates stress, but it's not so strong at raising energy. Okay, that's where herbal medicine would be better, and a combination of herbal medicine and acupuncture would be better in raising energy and lowering stress levels, and that will then have an impact on your chart. Your chart should come into normal ranges of temperature, and you should also not see any kind of spiky pattern like the sawtooth pattern that we talked about before. Okay, next question. Okay, Erin in Oxford says, I've been charting for 5 years and trying to get pregnant on and off for a year. Is it more important to have intercourse in the days leading up to ovulation or to continue for a few days after ovulation? In other words, is it possible my temperature is deceiving and I'm actually not ovulating when I think I am? The answer to that question is yes, that is very possible. Your temperatures could be kind of misleading a little bit, and that's where the 3/6 rule is quite important to understand that and be clear on that and not just rely on the software. Okay, you could also use OPK tests, so urine kits, to test for ovulation and see how that ties in with your BBT chart, and you can also check for cervical mucus to see where ovulation is likely to be happening. Normally with cervical mucus you should have egg white mucus before ovulation. Ovulation will then happen after that, and you'll see a shift in temperature. Once ovulation has happened, because of the warming up of the body, the cervical mucus won't be egg white anymore. It will dry up, and it will become thicker, creamier, or potentially you won't have any at all because it stays retained in the body and plugs the cervix, which closes the cervix for you during the luteal phase. So in terms of when to actually be active and have intercourse, the best is a lead up before ovulation, then through the time of ovulation and after ovulation as well. I would say to always continue having intercourse until the second or third elevated temperature after ovulation, because then you'll know from the 3/6 rule that you've definitely ovulated, and then you can be clear that you have actually covered every sort of aspect. But ideally, you want to start a few days in advance as well. So a few days before and then during ovulation, and up to 3 days after ovulation could be helpful to make sure you cover your most fertile time. Okay, how are we doing for time? So we can do a few more, that's fine. Claire in London says, I get up to go to the toilet sometimes twice, and I'm often woken by planes going over my house. So don't get 3 hours unbroken sleep before I wake up. When is the best time to take my temperature? I know I mentioned it earlier, but I thought it'd be good to reiterate that because it's a very common question. Basically, if you don't have 3 hours uninterrupted sleep, you know, sometimes as in this situation, there's nothing you can do about that. The key thing is to find some common point of measure for your temperature, and I would base it really on a set time. So whatever time you have to get up through the week, I would take that as the point at which you measure your temperature and keep that consistent. If you wake up during the night or before taking your temperature, that's just the way it is. There isn't much you can really do about that. But I would certainly continue to chart. I would just be aware and maybe make a note on the days where you have woken up in advance, just so that if it does go higher that day or lower that day, and it looks out of sync with the others, you know why when you look back at it. So I would say just take your temperature at the time that you are supposed to get up. So if your alarm goes off at 7 o'clock every day and that's the time you have to actually get up, then take it just before you actually get up. Okay, let's have a look for the next one. Okay, that one we have answered. Bear with me just a moment. Okay, Laura in Niagara Falls asked a very similar question. How important is taking your temperature at the same time every day to the accuracy of the chart and information that you get? It is actually really quite important. If you take your temperature at 7 o'clock in the morning and it is 36.6, and you take it at 8 o'clock in the morning the next day, you'll find that it probably will have gone up by about 0.1 degree. So every hour that you take it later, it will generally rise by about 0.1 degree centigrade, that is. Unfortunately, I can't calculate that for you in Fahrenheit. but it will go up, basically, for every hour that you take it later, up to a point, obviously, because temperature generally doesn't go higher than about 37.5 degrees if you're healthy, normally about 37-ish. So it will go higher, and so doing it every day at the same time is the most consistent and efficient way to do it. It will give you the best type of chart. Again, try not to be sort of, don't get too hung up on that. If it happens that you oversleep or you're too tired and you can't and you want to have a lie-in, then have a lie-in. But just make a note that you took the temperature later. On the Fertility Friend chart, it actually asks you what time you took it. And when you take it outside of your default time, it will actually mark the circle with a white circle, a clear circle rather than a blue one. And that automatically shows you that there was a time difference. So when you look back at the chart, you can see that the time was different. And then you can go into the chart to find out what time you took it. Okay, Gagana asked a question. There's quite a few questions, so I'm going to pick the first one. What causes the temperature to rise around ovulation? That is progesterone. Okay, the temperature will only rise once progesterone is being released, and progesterone will be released primarily from a ruptured follicle, which is called a corpus luteum. So that's the follicle that has burst or ruptured and released the egg for you, and that follicle becomes a corpus luteum, or it's just called a corpus luteum, and it basically releases progesterone. The other source of progesterone is from the adrenal glands. Okay, so sometimes you can have a situation where you don't have a ruptured follicle, It is luteinized. It is affected by luteinizing hormone, which is the thing that normally makes it rupture, but it actually doesn't rupture, and it's called a luteinized unruptured follicle. It's not that common. Most people don't have that scenario, but I have come across it a few times, and it needs work then to help it to actually rupture. But you can still have high temperatures there, and that's why it is actually good sometimes to get a scan and just have a check and make sure that you're ovulating, make sure that there are ruptured follicles there. And you do a scan basically after ovulation, 6 to 8 days after ovulation, and that will basically show you. But for the majority of people, that's not an issue. The thing that causes the temperature to rise after ovulation is actually the increase in progesterone. The hormone progesterone is the dominant hormone in the luteal phase, and basically it is warming up your body. That's its sole purpose, is to warm up the uterus, warm your general body temperature, seal off the uterus with a plug of mucus because it dehydrates the mucus. It goes from cervical egg white mucus to a thick mucus, which creates a little plug in the bottom of the cervix, in the entrance to the cervix. That then closes the uterus off, and it warms it up and turns it into a lovely, cozy little incubator, okay, basically. And then when the egg comes along and has hopefully been fertilized, it enters into a nice, warm, cozy environment where implantation can then occur. And this is why it's so important that temperatures are actually monitored and looked at, because you can see whether there is a good enough body temperature there for implantation to happen and to occur. Okay, I'm going to do one more question. Let's have a look here. Let me just refresh these. Okay, there's a question from Fran in Wellington. I've actually answered it already, so I'm just going to just say listen back. If you're not listening at the moment, or you've listened to the replay, hopefully you haven't missed a bit where I talk about BBT temperatures being a bit too low. If temperatures are 35.9, that is a bit too low. It can indicate a thyroid issue. If you've had your thyroid checked, make sure that you haven't just checked TSH, but check the T3, T4, reverse T3, check the antibodies, get a whole profile done. And if all of that's normal, then in Chinese medicine, we would just say that there is a qi deficiency and a yang deficiency, a deficiency of warmth in the body and a deficiency of energy. So you could work on actually increasing your energy, not through exercising, that depletes energy, but by eating really well, eating nourishing foods, and potentially having some herbal treatment with a practitioner that can actually give you some prescriptions to warm your body up and help it become activated. Okay, one more. Let's have a look. Sorry to keep hanging on like this, but I have to read everything because I'm on my own. When I'm doing this with one of the guys on the team, they're talking and I'm reading the next question. But when it's me, I'm having to read them all in advance. Okay, there's lots of questions about low temperatures. A question from Grace in Melbourne. Is BBT 100% reliable? For example, if temperatures don't appear to be lining up to where they should be, e.g. are low or don't appear to have a spike after ovulation, but other signs indicate a regular cycle, cervical mucus, length of cycle, etc., is it possible that everything is functioning properly, or are the temperatures a solid indicator with no room for doubt? That's a really interesting question, Grace. Thank you. And basically, is it 100% reliable? No, absolutely not. No method of testing is, I don't believe anyway, and no method of monitoring is 100% reliable. However, neither is relying solely on cervical mucus or length of cycle. So it's about a combination of all of them. Okay, if you have a good regular cycle of, let's say, 26 to 30 days is fine. If you have a cycle that's 26 to 30 days and you have cervical mucus and you think you know where you're ovulating, everything could be okay, but I would then use the BBT chart to look that little bit deeper and see when ovulation is actually happening. In terms of the reliability of identifying ovulation, it is very, very reliable. I don't know what the percentage is, but I'm pretty sure it's going to be somewhere above 95%. As I said right at the beginning, I've looked at over 25,000 charts over the last 17, 18 years, and I'm quite familiar with ovulation and what it looks like, and also people having scans and blood tests alongside it to confirm it. And it is generally pretty correct. So I would use your general signs and symptoms of your cycle, and then I would look at the BBT, and I would rely on it very much so for identifying ovulation, and just make sure the two phases of the cycle are correct and that ovulation is happening at the right time and that neither phase is too short. If you have unusual patterns or consistently low patterns or always the same temperature or always high temperatures, if there's any doubt with that and you think those don't kind of match the descriptions of what I went through earlier, then I would suggest getting a new thermometer and just testing it with another one. Generally, with digital thermometers, you will, with two different thermometers, you'll get two different readings, which just shows us that they're not actually as precise as mercury ones. But it's always worth checking your thermometer if you're not 100% sure, if you think that your cycle is really healthy and okay. But if you're, if several thermometers are showing low temperatures or showing that there is no proper increase around the time of ovulation, then I would look further into that. And there is a potential then that maybe ovulation is not happening. The way to check that is have a blood test 6 to 8 days after the point at which you think you ovulate. Check your progesterone level and see if it's high enough. It needs to be at least 30 units, 30 nmols. That's not the American units. In American units, it needs to be over 9. In most of the rest of the world, it's nmols that we use, and it's 30 units. So if the progesterone is lower than that, then that could be indicating an issue. Also, you could have a scan and check for a corpus luteum to make sure you're ovulating. Okay, so I hope that has answered the question. It's not 100% accurate, and I wouldn't solely rely on it, but I would quite strongly rely on it because it is actually very, very precise at mapping ovulation. Okay, that's all I have time for. Unfortunately, I wish I could sit here and just answer your questions, and at some point soon, I'm sure I'll just do another Q&A session, which will just be answering questions and not talking as well about a topic. I hope that's been of help for you. I've had a really great time, even though I'm talking on my own. I can see responses from you coming in the question section, so thank you for your feedback and so forth. It's always a pleasure to do these events. Remember, if you are interested in working with me, book your free discovery session. You'll find it incredibly helpful on getting really clear on where you are and where you need to go next, and you'll also hear about how you can work with me and join the program if that's of interest to you. If not, that's absolutely fine too. That's everything, I think, from my end. So many thanks for listening in. Thank you for supporting Fertility Question Time. We are still the longest running and largest fertility event that happens every month in the world. So thank you for making that a reality and for supporting it. And I hope that this has been of help for you. And I hope you have a good rest of your day or evening, depending on where you are. Bye for now, and I'll be back soon with another topic for you. Thank you. Bye-bye.